Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, The Importance of Catheterization in Pulmonary Hypertension, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Richard A. Krasuski, MD. Dr. Krasuski is a director of Adult Congenital Heart Disease Services, Cardiovascular Medicine, Cleveland Clinic Foundation, Cleveland, Ohio. Dr. Krasuski has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He received grants for clinical research from Actelion Pharmaceuticals. He served as an advisor or consultant for Actelion Pharmaceuticals, Gilead Sciences, and VentrePoint. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Actelion Pharmaceuticals and Roche. Dr. Krasuski does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Krasuski does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to educate clinicians on the appropriate use of right heart catheterization for the diagnosis of PAH. This activity is supported by Actelion Pharmaceuticals. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello, I'm Dr. Richard Krasuski from the Cleveland Clinic. I'm the Director of Adult Congenital Heart Disease Services at the Cleveland Clinic, and I also work with the Pulmonary Hypertension Program. My goal over the next 15 minutes is to discuss the importance of catheterization in the assessment of pulmonary hypertension. What I'd like to do is give you just a little bit of background on pulmonary hypertension. I'm going to go over the critical roles of hemodynamic assessment. I'm going to go over the components of a proper assessment, and finally give you a little bit of detail about the pitfalls and troubleshooting. So in terms of pulmonary hypertension, it continues to be, at least pulmonary arterial hypertension, a deadly disease. It has a poor prognosis. There's a 15% mortality, even now with more advanced therapies on modern therapies. And so this is really a disease that needs to be addressed very rapidly and with the proper treatment. Pathogenesis-wise, we're getting to this disease at the much later stages. It would be ideal if we could pick this up at the time that there's early vascular injury. So getting the patient properly diagnosed is of critical importance, and heart catheterization is probably the most important component of that evaluation. Now, it's important to recognize not all pulmonary hypertension is pulmonary arterial hypertension, and really only a small portion of that pulmonary hypertension is pulmonary arterial disease. And as you can see, there's idiopathic disease, there's connective tissue disease that is in group 1 pulmonary hypertension, there's congenital heart disease, HIV infection, portal pulmonary hypertension. And by the latest classification system, it's really group 1 that we're trying to identify, that's pulmonary arterial hypertension. As there are other groups as well, and those perhaps have different types of therapies. We're just learning how to approach those other types of pulmonary hypertension. But properly identifying pulmonary hypertension can make a huge difference, as there are therapies now available, and you can see early results now from a meta-analysis suggesting that not only are we making people feel better, walk further, but we're also perhaps impacting on their mortality as well. Now, as you probably recognize, the definition of pulmonary arterial hypertension is a hemodynamic definition. And to get those hemodynamics, you have to do a heart catheterization. That definition is a mean pulmonary arterial pressure that's greater than 25 millimeters of mercury, and you have to exclude a pulmonary capillary wedge pressure or a left ventricular end diastolic pressure that's greater than 15 millimeters of mercury. So ideally you want it less than or equal to 15 millimeters of mercury. If it's over that, then it's not pulmonary arterial disease. Now, it's important that the old definition also includes a pulmonary vascular resistance over 3 Woods units. Now, there are predictors of poor outcome in pulmonary hypertension. Those include clinical, hemodynamic, and laboratory assessments. And I will stress that 2 of those characteristics that we use, the high right atrial pressure and the low cardiac index, can really only be assessed in the catheterization laboratory with the use of right heart catheterization. Now, when should you do a right heart cath in pulmonary hypertension? It's important to recognize that pretty much anybody in whom we're going to start treatment for PAH should be tested hemodynamically before that treatment is initiated. The diagnostic sequence in the latest set of guidelines says right heart catheterization should be performed in any patient that you think has probable pulmonary arterial hypertension. And it's important to recognize it's the real only gold standard that we have for the assessment of hemodynamics and pulmonary hypertension. So it's a critical part of our assessment. Now, there are pros and cons of doing a heart catheterization in patients with pulmonary hypertension. On one side, you have the cons, which are it's an invasive procedure. There are access site problems. There are possibilities of getting a vasovagal reaction. You can have arrhythmias. You can develop heart block. You need an experienced operator, ideally, who's familiar with what they're collecting. It can be time-consuming. It can be costly. But on the other side is a very precise definition that you're going to get. You're going to rule out aberrant measurements. Echo can be wrong. It can be underestimating or overestimating the pulmonary pressures. You want to exclude other diagnoses. You want to assess vasoreactivity. And it's important, as I mentioned, for prognostication. And finally, it does allow you to reassess the patient when they're on treatment to see how they're doing. So in terms of complications, those were recognized very early after the development of right heart catheterization. But with newer techniques, those risks have gone down significantly. And the latest large multi-center registry actually showed that the amount of complications are very small. It's about a 1.1% risk of adverse events and a very low incidence of mortality. There are some essential components that you want to have when you're collecting your catheterization data. First of all, you want to start with the oxygen saturations. It's important to collect the superior vena cava and inferior vena cava saturation so that you can get a mixed venous saturation. You also want to get a pulmonary artery and a systemic saturation, so that tells you whether or not a shunt is present. That's at the least. I ideally like to get a full saturation run so I can be quite confident that I'm not missing a shunt. You want to get a right atrial pressure, a right ventricular pressure. You want to measure a pulmonary artery pressure, both the systolic, the diastolic, and the mean pressure. Now, probably the most important and most difficult thing is to measure a pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, and you want to be quite confident that you've measured that correctly. Now, if you haven't measured that correctly or you're questioning whether or not the data is accurate, you want to go in and you want to get a left ventricular and diastolic pressure. In rare cases, if there's a mechanical aortic valve, you may need to go transseptally to get a left atrial pressure. Now, you also want to measure your cardiac output and index, and with that, in the pulmonary pressures, you can measure your pulmonary vascular resistance. Now, you want to measure your systemic blood pressure and your heart rate, which helps to know how accurate those calculations are. And finally, you do want to assess the response to a pulmonary acute vasodilator to see how the patient responds. Now, there are a few things to mention in terms of quality standards. You want to make sure that they're phasic recording strips. You want them long enough to look for respiratory variation. Ideally, you want to measure your pressures at end expiratory. You want to obtain pressures in the atrial and pulmonary chambers over 10 beats, ideally, to correct for the respiratory changes. And if you're going to use pullback pressures, I like to measure pressures going in each chamber, but if you're going to measure pullback pressures, make sure you give it enough time so a steady state is reached in each chamber so that you're confident that the numbers are accurate. And as I mentioned, if the pulmonary capillary wedge is questionable at all, measure the left ventricular and diastolic pressure. Now, I like to do a pulmonary vasodilator challenge in most of the patients that I see, but it's particularly critically important in the patients with group 1 pulmonary arterial hypertension, as a positive response to vasodilators appears to predict safety in the use of calcium channel blockers. It's important to recognize, however, that very few patients remain responders to calcium channel blockers, and it's probably about 1 in 20 patients in whom catheterization is performed that will actually be able to be treated with a calcium channel blocker long-term successfully. Now, patients with non-reactive vasculature have more advanced disease. They're going to be the ones that you're going to treat more aggressively. Now, there is a cost and expense with pulmonary vasodilator challenge, but that's a very small amount compared to the amount of cost that goes into treating patients. And so you want to make sure that you apply the drugs adequately and properly to those patients, and getting this information is critical. Now, there are some guidelines in terms of assessment of patients, and predominantly those are for assessment of patients with idiopathic pulmonary hypertension. But we are getting more data now in the group 1 patients that pulmonary vasoreactivity is important. And there are some other types of disease processes outside of group 1 pulmonary hypertension, or PAH, where there may be important prognostic information from obtaining pulmonary vasodilator challenge. Now, there are a number of different drugs. I like to use inhaled nitric oxide, but other options here include adenosine and epoprostenol as well to assess basal reactivity. Now, moving on to the pitfalls in right heart catheterization, there are obviously technical concerns, and the right heart catheterization can be difficult, particularly in patients with advanced pulmonary hypertension where they have large pulmonary arteries, they have large right ventricles, large right atria, the catheter can coil. So having some familiarity with that, recognizing that there are different types of catheters, some are a little bit stiffer, it allows you to get into the pulmonary artery a little bit easier. Now, measurements of cardiac output can have tremendous variation, so that's very important, particularly if you're going to use thermodilution. Ideally, you want to use the FIC method in the setting of a depressed cardiac output. There are inotropic effects of adenosine, so it's important to recognize before you label the patient as being reactive to a pulmonary vasodilator that you've assessed that, in fact, you didn't increase the cardiac output without changing the pulmonary vascular resistance. Is labeling somebody as a reactive patient and putting them on a calcium channel blocker can do some detriment. Now I'm going to go over a case that really illustrates some of the things that I've been trying to bring out. This is a 53-year-old gentleman with scleroderma for 10 years. He came in basically with 5 years of exertional dyspnea. He has some mild interstitial lung disease. For 3 months, he's been experiencing progressive shortness of breath, and he comes into your office basically with those concerns. Now, on examination, he's a very pleasant gentleman. He's in mild respiratory distress. His jugular venous pressure is approximately 12 millimeters of mercury or 12 centimeters. He's has a mildly prominent pulmonic closure sound, so suggesting he's got some pulmonary hypertension. He's got a tricuspid regurgitant murmur that you can hear on examination. It gets louder on inspiration as these murmurs do. He's got a little bit of edema peripherally. This is a still frame of a apical four-chamber view with the right ventricle shown on the left side of the screen. And you can see he's got a dilated right ventricle. He's got a small and compressed left side, a small left atrium. You can see this is his subcostal view on the left. You can see he's got a big dilated inferior vena cava. He's got an elevated tricuspid regurgitant velocity that you can see on the right side of the screen. And so he goes to the heart catheterization laboratory, and this is the data that gets called to you. He's got a right atrial pressure of 17, A wave, the V wave is 15, the mean is 14. His right ventricular pressure is 66 over 12. His pulmonary artery pressure is 71 over 41 with a mean of 51. His wedge pressure is reported to you as a mean of 41. Cardiac index at 2.3, pulmonary vascular resistance calculates at 1.9 Woods units. So this is a true case, actually, this patient. I went back and looked at his hemodynamic tracings, and on the left side of the screen you can see the pulmonary artery, and then you can see how the wedge was collected. It's a very high wedge pressure, and certainly doesn't fit the clinical picture. In this patient, he's got a very dilated right side. He's got a small left atrium. I would have suspected that this patient has pulmonary arterial disease, and in fact, he was labeled as pulmonary venous disease. So we went back and looked at his mitral inflow, and you can see he had a fairly normal E wave and A wave, suggesting that, in fact, this was probably not properly collected. So we took him back to the catheterization laboratory, and you can see we went in first and measured a left ventricular end diastolic pressure and found that it was quite low. We also compared the right atrium and, you know, the right ventricular and left ventricular end diastolic pressures. You can see that they're both quite low. And so, in fact, when we repeated the catheterization, measured the wedge pressure on the left side of the screen, compared to the pulmonary artery pressure on the right side of the screen, in fact, this was not pulmonary venous hypertension, but pulmonary artery hypertension. And what had happened in this case classically, as occurs, is that the wedge was not properly measured. And so on the repeat catheterization, his RA pressure had a mean of 8, his RV pressure was 60 over 8, his pulmonary artery pressure mean was 40, his wedge was 12, and you can see his index was 2.2. But what's most striking is the pulmonary vascular resistance is now 6.4 Woods units, which is very different than a pulmonary vascular resistance that was 1.9 before. So this patient was, in fact, improperly labeled initially as having pulmonary venous hypertension when actually he had pulmonary arterial disease. So we also did a pulmonary vasodilator challenge. His mean pulmonary artery pressure dropped a little bit to 36. His wedge remained unchanged. His cardiac index was preserved. His pulmonary vascular resistance was slightly lower. This patient was enrolled into a trial that we were doing at that point for people with connective tissue diseases, and he's been managed with those particular medications, and he's been feeling much better as a consequence. So just to mention, one of the biggest pitfalls is the effects of partial balloon occlusion. You want to make sure that the pressure that you're measuring is in fact correct, and you can see that with ideal occlusion, you get a much more accurate measure of the pressure. Now finally, I want to mention probably the most important thing out of this whole discussion, and that is you have to communicate when you're doing these catheterizations with the referring physician. Immediate communication is really the ideal, but at least having some form of written communication to the physician is essential. You want to make sure that you've differentiated for that physician between pulmonary arterial hypertension and pulmonary venous hypertension so that the patient's properly treated, and really want to make sure that you tell the folks that have referred the patient to you what the right atrial pressure is, what the pulmonary artery pressure is, what the cardiac output and index is, and finally what the vasoreactivity is so that that patient can properly be treated. So in summary, my take-home points to you are right heart catheterization is a critical tool in the assessment of probable pulmonary arterial hypertension. It is the gold standard to distinguish pulmonary arterial disease from pulmonary venous disease. And when it's properly performed, it provides very high quality data with very low patient risk. And I thank you for participating.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, The Importance of Catheterization in the Assessment of Pulmonary Hypertension. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.